The following is a breakout session from the 2014 Acts 29 conference in Dallas. Given the interactive nature of breakouts and Q&A, there may be extended periods of silence.
Right now, we're continuing to talk church planting, and I've invited Dusty Thompson to come and teach us, and then his executive pastor, I think Cade Wilcox, will be up here for some Q&A as well. Dusty is in Lubbock, Texas, at Redeemer Church in Lubbock, and Redeemer has done a great job of developing and sending out church planters, and the reason we kind of start talking about this, even though you guys are in the church plant phase, it feels weird sometimes to be going, I'm planting a church right now, why do I need to be thinking about planting a church? But to put this on your radar and in your mindset, in your DNA from the beginning is going to be really important. So Dusty's done a great job with it. He's one of our best models in the network. And so I had him come. And, man, I want to pray for you, and then we'll get going.
All right.
Dusty's also my fishing friend. So we have that in common as well. Father, thanks for my friend, and thank you for the way you're using him not only to reach people in Lubbock, but also to send out pastors all over Texas, into Colorado, New Mexico, and all over, and the heart you've given him to plant churches and to develop leaders. And so I pray that he could share that wisdom with us, and we ask your Spirit would guide our time, give him words, give him insight, and then prepare our hearts and minds as well. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. All right. Thanks, Hunter. Appreciate him on, basically. All right. Yeah. Hunter gave me one of the best tips ever. I don't even know if he can pastor a lick, but the guy gave a great spot to a fly fishing place, and we went to Yellowstone. He'd been telling me about it years before, so we got to enjoy that with him and one of our church members and my little brother and my 13-year-old kid. So had a good time with that dude. Talked church planting along the way. All right, so there's a good basis for church planting you just heard. I'm going to try to make this real practical. I get it. It's 4 o'clock. So I'm going to try to put some feet on this whole deal. All right, so let's start with this. And I need you guys to talk with me so this won't just totally suck. Tell me all the reasons why you or others might not church plant. I mean, let's just start free-flowing it. Like, what are reasons why people aren't going to do it? A variety of reasons. So money, it's a funding and resource issue. What else? The fear of failure that either you, like your church, might not be able to adequately support it and withstand the loss of best leaders, or that this little very poorly undercapitalized church plant may bomb right out of the gate, right? That's another reason. What else? Yeah. Yeah, the start over deal is it, and that's real. What else? What's that? Yeah, all right. So like now you're starting to get out of like even outside of our church because all right. And I'm glad you brought this up because even internally we've talked about some defeaters for why and some even legitimate reasons. We'll come back to that in a minute. Why some of us might not be planting churches, not good, not enough leaders, not a qualified church planter, not enough resources. Don't want to kill your church. Don't want that church to bomb. But reasons that you'll run into, especially where I am. I'm in Lubbock, Texas. By the way, my name's Dusty, so there's that. Padgett right here, he's going to be planting in Stillwater. One of the things that we have to answer whenever we plant it is why do we need another church? How many of you guys are planting in kind of southern-ish context? I'm just curious. Okay, so how many of you guys are not planting in southernish, like where there's not loads and loads of churches? All right, so especially in our part of the neck of the woods, you're going to need to, like, you need to have that answer. Like, you just need to memorize it. Why do we have another church? And I don't care if you quote Keller or whatever. You need to do a good job of winsomely saying that. I don't think that's just a southern issue, though, because sometimes my experience has been with church planters and everywhere from, you know, we're talking Idaho to Salt Lake City to you name it, that sometimes Hunter and I have talked about this in Denver, sometimes guys can get really territorial, and the viewpoint is there's X number, there's a certain slice of pie, and all you did is just made those slices of pie that much smaller, right? So that's one reason why people don't, is we don't need any more of that. In fact, we're not even filling up the places we got, so what in the world are you doing cutting into the tiny market even more, right? Can y'all think of any other reasons? Cost, yeah. Cost of living for the one going, yeah.
For a given
Yeah, I mean, it's almost every church plant that I've heard of. Okay, maybe Hunter, maybe not your fellowship guys. They tend to be well capitalized sometimes. Almost every church plant I know is like dramatically, woefully undercapitalized. So a fear of them not having enough, and then Ascending Church, maybe, you know, you're what happens if, you know, 20% of your giving walks out of the door with that core team. You know, I mean, those are real things. So I mean, we could spend the whole rest of the session talking about all the things that are hard about it. There are many, many things that are hard about church planting. So it is hard. And what I want to do is there's going to be three parts to what we're going to hit in this last long stretch of your afternoon. We're going to talk how we make church planting part of your DNA even as you start, even before you start. Second thing we're going to talk about is there such a thing as planting a church too early? And there's going to be a yes and no answer to that. And third, what can you do right now? So that's where we're going to go. Now I have zero PowerPoint. We're just going to go with this and interact with it. And then Cade Wilcox over here, Hunter introduced him earlier, but he is really, really, really gifted at putting together systems and structures. And much of the stuff that you'll hear about what we've done would simply not be possible if there were no Cade. So the short version that it even is a good lead in to our story is on how do you make church planting part of your DNA as you start or before you start. Is I would strongly encourage you, this would be the first thing I would say about this, is to dream it and even get it on paper. Dream it and get it on paper. That state it, what your desire is. This was actually a big part of the reason why I chose to plant a church in Lubbock, Texas. I'm not from there. I'm from Fort Worth, just right over here. And so that's where I grew up, but I went to Tech. There are a lot of bitter Red Raider fans right now. If you're following college football or college basketball, for that matter, it'll be the same story. So, I mean, that was a part of a home for me. And then I was on a staff in Lubbock at a Baptist church doing college and missions ministry. And I was really torn between the Rocky Mountain West, for reasons that I've already stated, and Lubbock. And I'd go back and forth. And ultimately, the reason why I felt like the Lord leading me to plant in Lubbock is that I thought we could actually do this thing well because of Tech and because of the nature of the city, that I thought I would love to go to Salt Lake City, but I was hoping and praying for Britton right over here, who's our current resident, who's going to plant in Salt Lake City in the next 18 months, praying that I could just multiply myself over and over again. Some of you guys are not in context that are set up that easily, but that was why we planted in Lubbock, a big part of it at least. So before we started, you know, one of the vision points we had is we wanted to plant 20 domestic churches by the year 2020. And we wanted to have 20 international teams. And our specific niche, I'm not saying this has to be this way for everyone, but this was on our heart from before day one, was our thing is going to be working with unreached, unengaged peoples. That means parts of the world internationally that don't have a church yet. And like there aren't national pastors to work with. And so we're going to send our teams, our people, to go make a gospel beachhead in places where Jesus isn't known. So we have a common friend of our Idaho people. Where'd you guys go? Y'all are in the back. They know him, one of my former elders that went to lead a team. You'll hear about him in just a minute in the Middle East on the Arabian Peninsula. And it's pretty cool, man. One of my very best dudes that's there. And for the first time in 1,500 years, this ethnicity of Muslim people, formerly Muslim people, there are 20 brothers and sisters gathering that a church has not gathered in 1,500 years in this country among a 3 million person people group. So that those were parts of our vision, right? Both of those components. And I would just encourage you, it doesn't have to be that. In fact, there's some of the way that we've said that if I was going to do it over again, I might say it a little differently. But something, you know, that you want to state the goal while you're reaching people there, that there's something that you're going to want to do to reproduce yourself that you've heard surely between, I thought that was a great session, this last one on the biblical foundations for planting churches. You've heard a lot that we are a one-trick pony in this network. What's the thing we do? Y'all remind me. We plant churches. That's it. So the goal isn't just to get your church on its feet, even though it is. We want your church to be healthy. But the goal is that you would be able to get on your feet and then turn around and actually plant, you know, and even cooperate with others who are doing that. So dream it and state it. That'd be the first thing I would say about how to make your church, you know, that part of your church planting, part of your DNA. Second thing is to staff it, Now, some of you are thinking, dude, we're in the 0 to 50 thing, so, you know, staff it. Well, here's what I mean, is what that means right now is you. Probably. How many of you guys are the lead guy that are in here? Okay, so you know, about half the room. What I mean is probably you. And the part of the reason for that is an expertise issue. The second is a bandwidth thing. My guess is that the other guys that are part of your core, you know, or whatever you're going to call what you've got right now, of something between 0 and 50, that your secondary, tertiary guys are probably significantly less. Less skilled in church planning and pastoring than you are. They all they know is what they're doing with you, and you're the one that's put the stuff together, has put the vision on print. So one thing I would encourage right now, before you have, you know, elders and staff, and I mean, Lord willing, that you'll get there, is that you would consider staffing it in the form of you. Just something to consider is generosity with your time and tithing your time to church planning. And so if you're, let's say you've got, you know, 50 hours a week that between attending services and everything you do, consider 4 to 5 hours a week that you just donate. And it could be, it may come in bunches and coming to an Acts 29 event like this, or it could be in a weekly coaching call with a guy that's a couple of steps behind you, or in sitting down with a guy that's on a church staff in your city that's toying with becoming a church planner, or has some points of overlap theologically, methodologically, that's wanting to grow, that may be years off, or a young leader that you feel like may have the chops to be an elder of your church, and maybe has expressed even an interest in church planning. Consider tithing your time to that. But over the long haul, I mean, the reality of it is that we wouldn't be where we are without Cade. And so even from the very beginning, one of my elders that I mentioned earlier that went to the Middle East, Drew, he was on staff, and we carved out a big portion of his job was to mobilize the international part. That's what Padgett has done currently on our staff right now. He helps develop these teams that go do these gospel beachheads. I realize we're talking a scale that is removed a bit from you guys right now, but I'm just saying those things were there at the beginning for us that I was committing my time to. And all that happened when we got bigger is that I was able, it was still just as much of a priority, but I was able to bring guys on my staff that are better than I am at it. Padgett carries a significant amount of expertise in missions mobilization that I lack. He's better than me. He does it. Cade is better than me at many of the implementation systems and processes that we would not be doing right now if he weren't on our team. So staff it. Number three, spend it. And so this is a basic one you know, 10% of your stuff is supposed to go to church planning. Can I just go ahead and say something that happens? I'm just going to get this out here. Man, it's going to be really easy for you to jack around with that 10% money and go, well, you know, I'm going to take these guys out to a meal, or we're going to go out of town. And I mean, these guys might be church planners someday. And so, and I don't have money in my operating budget, and we've already carved out this 10%, so we'll pull that from the 10%. It's going to be, hey, this guy from Campus Crusade, I love Crusade. I mean, I love NAVS. I mean, we're not a parachurch hater, but, you know, he's asking for money, and it's kind of like missions, you know? And so we're going to, because it's not something for our church, we're going to do this. That, I mean, let me just ask you to check yourself on this. So we get up all the time and will harp on our people about you need to be generous. And you heard the financial stuff, and I didn't hear your sessions today, but I bet it was awesome. And I bet it went something like, God has been really generous to you, and you're not discipling your people if you're not leading them into receiving the generosity of God and then expressing it financially. Was that close? Kind of-ish? So our churches will just pound that and be like, you need to be showing Jesus the money, and by Jesus, I mean me. And so we'll say that, and rightly, but then for some reason, like, that same principle doesn't apply, and we find a lot of ways around it to make the money kind of come back to us, and we kind of hold on to it. And you need to, it's not just your leaders giving to the church that you need to model this in, but the church corporately in setting its financial priorities. Probably a sermon that you've already preached or a discussion in your home or whatever you've done with a core group is something like, hey, your time and your money, establish your priorities. So if we're all in on Jesus, then our time and money should match that. Have you delivered a sermon, something like that, or a discussion? My guess is yes. I'm just saying that the church should likely reflect that too. You know, and you can model that corporately. And so, in fact, we say this a lot at our member meetings of, hey, here's our budget, and this is what we hope you're doing in your home. You know, the same basic idea. We don't even touch this 11%. It just flies out the door, and here's what we're spending that on. And, you know, we hope you would consider doing the same thing. It didn't even pass through. It just goes straight on and doesn't have any operational benefit. So spend it. Number four, make development part of your DNA. So, you know, developing good, again, systems and processes and discipleship structures and all of those things and just relationships, that development will be the soil that your future church planters will grow in, you know. So when it doesn't seem like you're doing church planting if you provide a culture where group leaders really enjoy leading groups, whatever you call, whatever tricked out name of gospel and mission and community that you kind of merge in there however you see that, whatever you call them. That people are nurtured and cared for and led and that are supported, those are the ones that will end up planting churches, you know, from your church. That's how that's going to be. So development where someone that's serving in your kids area, that something we were working very hard at and we took another look at it to make it better is our leadership development pipeline. Again, Cade was the architect. This is stuff he's good at, is from every layer in our church, every department in our church, different things that we train and assess at every layer, and hopefully even, you know, bringing relationship to bear. And so that kind of soil, good leaders will grow out of. Number five, hold loosely to your good leaders from the beginning. I heard this in the last session, and this is going to be painful. I'm just going to tell you straight up on this one. I've already mentioned Paget a couple of times. There's no part of me that organizationally is excited about easily the best, you know, the best missions leader that I think that you could probably have. I mean, he's revamped. I mean, I could spend a lot of time talking about things that he's developed I could have never done. I would have loved to have kept him, but his gifts and his heart are leading him to a inferior school in our league, Oklahoma State, in the town of Stillwater. But somebody needs to go there. It's his alma mater, and he's gonna go there. And so part of the deal is there are going to be some of these losses that you're going to wince at. And you can't talk about church planting and then get territorial. That's one that didn't come up earlier on why not to plant, but that's a for real one, is that you feel a bit invalidated when someone says, hey, man, thanks for all of your leadership and care. I'm gonna go do this over here. And it's going to feel like, what, do you not, did I not help you? Am I not helping you grow? Why do you feel like you need to go on your own? And that might even cause you to be a bit more generous and gracious if you have a sending church that you feel a bit strained with, that it's easy to feel that way. I mean, the bottom line is it feels invalidating. Why wouldn't you want to do this here with us? What's wrong with, do you think you're better? I mean, do you feel like, and it, even in this room, we're going to feel that way. Why couldn't you just stay here and do it? My lowest point, I was talking with my friends back here in Idaho that have the guy Drew I told you about in the Middle East. On year two of our plant, in fact, the Remkes have some family in Hunter's Church in Denver, that Drew was an elder and on staff. My other elder, Josh Reeves, is here at this conference. And within a few weeks, they both told me they were going to go plant in the next 6 months. Drew overseas and then Josh in Round Rock, Texas. And Josh was also going to bring another staff leader that's very, very gifted. And his name's Jordan. And so my best three leaders in my church walked out within 3 months of each, or 6 months of each other. It was easily the lowest point of my history at Redeemer. I was super depressed. We did not have the infrastructure to support it. It took years to rebuild. I would say 2 years to rebuild what I lost with those three guys. And we lost core families, but it really came down to those three guys. And those that were around back then would know it. But you're going to have to embrace, even if that part wasn't wise of them walking out so closely, you are going to have to hold loosely with your people. If you're going to be territorial with them, you're not going to plant churches. Last one here is don't forget about the international missions piece. I've mentioned this, but it gets left out a lot in Acts 29 circles. I was grateful to hear it in the session before, is we've got to be doing something with the fact that there are billions of people that have little to no access to the gospel message. I also care about Lubbock. I mean, let's think about this. I planted a church in a very church city. I care about Dallas. I care about Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and Denver, and everywhere in between, Salt Lake City. But I also think that we're messing up if we're at least not thinking and praying about parts of the world that don't even have access to a church, to the gospel, to scripture in their language, and we just want to do something about it. So even if you don't have expertise, at least praying, caring, that kind of thing, consider it. Maybe a step would be read Let the Nations Be Glad by Piper. You already like Piper. Read that one. All right, so those are some things that you can make part of your church planting, part of your DNA before you start. Here's the second question: is that we want to tackle is there such thing as planting a church too early? And now let me give you my yes answer to that. And that may surprise you, but I do think there is a too early, and you probably sense this, don't you? That for lots of us, that it might be organizational suicide if you're just to launch out a daughter church right now. You feeling that? And you're probably right. I'm actually not going to talk you out of that. Especially, this can also be true even if you're not in the 0 to 50 phase, but even if you plant a church in your own city. I'm not saying don't plant a church in your own city, but I am saying you're going to need even longer to replenish from it. I can think of a church in Lubbock it really cool, selflessly, planted a church in Florida. In fact, an Acts 29 guy in Tennessee was part of that core. He can tell you about it. I mean, dozens of families left Lubbock, Texas, and went and planted in some, I don't even know, place in Florida. And that church in Lubbock no longer exists. You know, it was healthy and thriving 7, 8, 10 years ago. And they shut the doors 2 or 3 years ago. And so what can happen is, and that wasn't even a same city plant, but it would feel like a same city plant that they had all this, these people leave. And what'll happen, especially in a same city plant, your most entrepreneurial risk-taking leaders are going to go want to do that. Like, in other words, your best guys and women. I mean, they're very best ones. And if you're not at a place where you can replace those losses, you need to think long and hard about that. So our church in Lubbock that did this, their heart was in the right place. They totally nailed that thing I said earlier that said, hold these leaders loosely. And they're like, hey, you're the Lord's. I needed to do this with Reeves and Remke. I needed to step in for the church and say, hey, look, man, I don't care which one of you suckers is going to stay in Lubbock, but you guys are not leaving within 6 months of each other. That's just the way it's going to be. You know, one of you guys needs to help me replace the other one, and then you can go. You can't leave at the same time. And there's just some wisdom on knowing when you're moving ahead of what your infrastructure can handle. So there's a legit yes to this. Now, don't use this to run to South America and back and say, we can't spare you, and because you can do this indefinitely. But knowing when you have the infrastructure to replace the losses that you've got and when you can do it, it can be a real energizing thing when people leave, because it's an opportunity for guys to step forward. Here's the other part of that. Even while I say that that it was very hard and likely unwise, I've got two of my best staff members I've ever had. Cade came in and took Drew's spot. It was a risk. He was not part of Redeemer. He was running a Christian camp. I basically hired him and then didn't, and then hired him along the way. Another guy was one of our very low-level leaders, but we just thought he had gifts that could project into the role, a guy named Jason Davila. It was a risk. Both of those could have blown up in my face. By God's grace, they were both amazing hires. And our church, I mean, if anything, I will be the barrier. These guys are organizationally and systems sound enough to take us to 8 billion, you know, people. I suspect my leadership ceiling will probably be more of the issue in all seriousness. So we killed that, but it could have went badly. But there's opportunities for growth. But just, you're going to have to think it through and talk with people that are wise about when it's a good idea. And just because somebody wants to doesn't mean that it needs to happen right now. So there is a yes to that. Be particularly cautious about plants in the same town. I saw a very good church planting guy here in the Metroplex mention this a while back, that if you plant in the same city, and I'm talking about even if you're a relatively mature church, we've been going for 7 years, if we planted in Lubbock, we might need 2 to 4 years to recover. Because again, your very best entrepreneurial, gifted people are going to be really thrilled about the prospects of this plant. And it may you may need to lick your wounds for a while. That's just part of the deal. I'm not saying don't do it, but you may not want to follow that up with another one 6 months later if you ever get to that place. In another sense, though, it's never too early to start preparing. I heard this in the last session, and I agree. Right now, you can begin developing. You can begin carving out money. You can begin to participate and function with other people that are doing it. Acts 29 West, part of their deal is there's even a buy-in right now whenever you join the network that you partner with them in funding. So even if you're thinking, dude, I'm nowhere close to having a church planter, being able to fund a church planter. I'm barely knowing what I'm going to be able to do. I don't think I can train a church planter yet. I'm just getting started. Well, you are participating in your area's church planting. We're trying to do this out in West Texas and in New Mexico. So there are ways in which you can even partner with other churches and say, hey, we'll pull resources, and I may not be ready to plant a church, but we can. And I have things I can bring to the table. And as you begin to develop a healthy church and a culture of leadership development, you can get there. So there's a yes and no. Can you plant it too early? Yes, but you can start doing legit things now, which brings to the third question and really my last talking point. So we can, you know, if you guys have things you want to talk about church planning, leadership development, any of that stuff. I mean, we're clowns, but we'll talk it out. We've learned a few things and we mess up a lot more, but we can think it through, and Cade can handle even systems-oriented things. So first thing about what you can do right now, other than things we mentioned earlier, if you don't have stuff in print about your desire, like some aspirations, maybe even goals of what you want to do, that might be step one of just what do you aspire to be, you know, that we want to, maybe if you're not in a kind of place that will naturally produce, you know, emerging leaders, then maybe a goal to participate with other churches that are doing that and find good partnerships to partner with them in church planting. I don't know, but some things in print, considering your funding, I mean, things we talked about. But other than that, so the first thing is what we talked about earlier. Second thing is play well with others. Play well with others. I would strongly encourage you to find different ways, as we mentioned a second ago, to pool resources, participate with other churches, and even other organizations outside of Acts 29 that you may have another. How many of you guys are in other denominations, have some other partnership besides Acts 29? Curious. Okay, so you guys likely have other resources, playing well with others. How many of you guys have church planting networks in your city that are not Acts 29, but your city has a group of church planters or pastors that meet to pray and talk? How many of y'all have that? Okay, so, I mean, we need to be able to play well with others. Since you guys are new, maybe y'all don't even know a lot of our history, but there was a time when Acts 29 was not known for being the guys that just could get along with other pastors and that didn't think everybody was stupid, you know. But there was a time when that was very much what we were known for, is that if you weren't reformed and if you weren't missional and wearing plaid and, you know, something, you know, that if you weren't doing everything in the Acts 29, you know, checkmark thing, that we wouldn't want to play well with you. But being able to partner well, even with people that are slightly out of your tribe, is a way you can be involved right now. So just having friendly relationships, you'll meet people in these other churches that like what you're about and that may want to partner with you and be planted by you, all right? And I'll get to that one here in this next point. So here's the next one is, out of our seven churches we've planted since we've been going about 7 years ago, it'll be 7 years in January, that four of them have been from guys that we found outside of our organization. So three have come from Redeemer, four are guys that we found. And this is why playing well with others is, it's something you can do right now, and you need to have your head up, you know? So I'll tell you where I found some of them. Some of them are gonna seem like crazy allocations of time, but if you're willing to tithe your time like I talked about, you could take some risks. All right, so I went up to the camp that Cade was running up. It was 3 hours away, and I had never even met Cade in person. We talked on the phone, had emails back and forth. In fact, it wasn't even time to start considering him for a staff position. He said, hey, I know a guy that's a youth minister at a little town called Pampa And he's kind of sort of interested in church planting, but I don't even know if he's a doctrinal fit for Acts 29, but he's open to meeting with you. And so he's bringing some youth here for an event. So I drove 3 hours up there and met Jeremy Buck. And I got to know Cade, which that was a value that has benefited Redeemer. And then I got to know Jeremy, and we just started building a relationship. And that, you know, over time, he felt led to plant a church there in his hometown of Pampa. And it's about 20,000 people. I didn't know the first thing about rural church planting. Lubbock's about 250,000. But he knew that context, and we developed a relationship and able to kind of coach him through that planting. And that was just as simple as being willing to make a drive and go meet somebody. I'm not trying to tell hero stories here, because I can tell you a lot of times where I went, I can think of a actually one that did hit, where I went to go meet David Ritchie, who ended up, he's an Acts 29 guy in Amarillo. He was a college minister in Amarillo, drove up there to watch his college service, met with another guy that I was really excited about, that actually I thought might be the better lead, met him for coffee, and like nothing ever came from it, you know? And so you're going to drive up to places and talk to people on the phone, nothing's going to happen, but we, you know, David Ritchie in Amarillo, Josh Green, that's Randy's brother in Odessa, was replanting a church that used to be a fundamentalist King James only kind of deal years ago, and was replanting one of those deals, and was wanting help on how to go in a gospel direction with the whole thing. And so just having your eyes up, even if you don't personally have the guy ready to go, there's a youth guy somewhere in a suburb around you or a city that you care about. And our conviction, like even right now, we think about Midland, Texas all the time. It's Ellis Island. It's an oil and gas town. And you have white-collar Harvard Business School grads coming there that are taking, you know, $250,000 annual salaries and more moving to Midland, many of whom don't know Jesus. You have high school dropouts making six figures, working 85 hours a week. It's Ellis Island, people pouring into there. We desperately want a church planter, and our conviction is we're actively looking. We don't have a guy at Redeemer that would fit there, that has a desire for that. But we're looking, and we're networking, and we're talking, and our conviction is there's a youth guy, there's somebody at seminary, there's a guy in Dallas we're talking to here that may want to move out there, and we're just going to throw lots of, I'm a fisherman, so this is kind of lame, but a trot line, you just put a bunch of, you know, stink bait and whatever on hooks, and you throw it in the water and go drink beer or whatever for a while, and then you come back, and there's a bunch of fish on it. And that's kind of our approach to, not all of it has to be people in your church, that one of the most strategic things you can do for your city and for your region is just have your eyes up, looking around. Randy Green's another one, so he's Josh's brother right back here, and he's in Snyder, another rural town, 20,000. That's going, what's that?
Not quite.
It's going through another oil boom. It's in the same, that little oil belt. And a lot of people move into that city. The existing churches are not equipped to reach them well. He grew up there, knows people, gets it, and is already starting to gather a core. That was just as simple as looking up and listening and being willing to just partner and be a friend. So we've done a lot of things wrong. I actually think we've done a better job of just looking and listening and praying for our area and region and seeing who God's raising up. It's great to be a Calvinist at times like that. So, Austin Lawrence is another crazy, I'll tell you one more story, crazy story. All right, Austin Lawrence is in Denver at a church in Denver close to Hunter. They're all close to Hunter, I think, in downtown Denver. Like, you can throw rocks off the top and hit all of them. So Austin Lawrence was the executive pastor there at one of the churches. And so one of the members of our church had a brother that called me that lives in Abilene, and he's Church of Christ, kind of a little bit Church of Christ, and was still involved with that, but kind of moderate, and had been visited Redeemer, talked to Landon, saw their growth, really wanted something like that, went to our Houston boot camp, actually came in, and he was interested in being the lead guy. We had him come in and preach at one of our preaching labs, actually did a great job, had never preached in his life. We're sitting at the kitchen afterwards, and he says, I don't want to be a lead pastor. I mean, that happened right then. And we're like, well, crap, man, we're going nowhere. And I just broke it to him. I said, well, look, man, I know you want a church like this in Abilene, but you're going nowhere without a lead guy that can lead this mission. So maybe we should try to pray. He said, you don't have anybody that you could send? And I'm like, no, bro. I mean, I just don't. I mean, I don't have anybody like that. And so we kind of left, kind of moping out of there going, well, maybe nothing in Abilene. And we were really hopeful because he's a really gifted relational guy. Well, he calls me on a river in Colorado with one of my fishing buddies that's his brother, and that went fishing with Hunter this last summer. And he said, dude, I got to tell you a crazy story. And so he was at a wedding, I think near San Antonio, that Zach was, Zach Sheets. And he sees Austin Lawrence there, that's the guy from Denver. And Austin was down there. They were at a wedding there. They went to ACU together. That's a little small Church of Christ college in Abilene. They met at that wedding and saw each other and started talking, and then figured out that he was actually looking at planting a church back in Texas. Austin was, and Zach wanted to see something in Abilene. So long story short, 2 weeks later, Cade and a few of us others on staff drove to Abilene to meet this kind of arranged marriage kind of thing between Zach and Austin. And, you know, there were some bumps in the road, but bottom line is it was a connection. And we kind of just, our role was connecting the dots, being an encouragement and coaches, and then throwing some money. I mean, that was it. I mean, we didn't develop Austin. That happened in Denver by two different Acts 29 pastors. And so all that to be said, there was really not a hero in this thing, but you can do that right now, right? You can do that right now. Two last things. Consider hosting events to smoke out guys. You may need to pull together with other guys in your region, but we've also had, that's actually where David Ritchie and Amarillo came from, is we put on an event. And Chandler came out and spoke at it. I'm not saying you're going to be able to get Chandler. We were really fortunate. Yancey Arrington from Clear Creek came. Our whole region showed up in Lubbock and made a big deal about it. And we smoked out guys that planted churches with our network that we didn't know were there. So that was some of these events. It didn't have to be a huge deal, but that a lot of times people just didn't know that you were there. Last thing, and this is the most important thing of all, out of everything that I've said, is if you are serious about growing a church planting, you know, movement, you know, you've got these big dreams and you want to plant, you know, 20 churches in the next, you know, 6 months, and you want to do this and this and this, and you've got all these big dreams, and that's awesome. I'm not trying to talk you out of any of that. The most critical thing you can do if you're serious about planting lots of churches and developing people and looking up for other people and partnering with other networks and your region and all these things is you having a healthy, thriving church. That's the most strategic thing you can do. That a disproportionate number of churches are planted by larger churches with resources that have bandwidth to do it. And I mean, right now you feel it, don't you? I mean, you're just trying to get your head above water. It won't feel a lot different than that when you run a couple hundred. You're going to be gulping for air. And I'm not saying that you are, I'm not trying to invalidate your efforts in the kingdom when you run 125 as if that's not significant. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that if your heart is aching right now, saying, I want to plant a church or 10 a lot, I want to plant a lot of them. I really do. I want to make the biggest splash that I can. That a healthy, thriving, growing church is going to have, the larger you are, the more muscle you'll have. One of the things I love the most about the way that Padgett and before him Drew led our missions area, like our international missions area, historically missions people are insufferable, you know, that everything they do, you know, you build a building or you staff someone, they're like, man, that could have been missions, you know, that could have fed somebody and who knows what, you know, and everything like that. We could have sent another missionary out. Here's what's interesting about our missions people. That there's no one in our whole church, I think, that our people that are the most invested in our international missions world, no one is more interested in seeing Redeemer grow and develop infrastructure and see people come to Jesus in Lubbock, especially because we train our international people on being in mission in Lubbock. If they're not doing it here, we ain't sending them there anyways. Same thing for church planters. But they know that if Redeemer's budget is X instead of Y, we're going to send a lot more missionaries, you know, same thing for church planting. And I mean, it's just a reality of it. If we were running 250, I couldn't have a Cade and we wouldn't have the structures we have. And so I'm just saying all of it goes together that maybe for some of you, if a take home is, you know what, I just need to get back to developing leaders and planting a healthy church and doing what I can and looking around and playing well with others and putting it on paper, that you building a healthy church that is serious about the mission of Jesus, may be the most strategic thing that'll pay off for you later. And what'll happen is it'll really start to speed up when you get on your feet. So I'm not prescribing that nor invalidating it. Our Redeemer Round Rock, our first plant from Josh Reeves, is about to plant a church in Northwest Austin. And they run, I don't even know, 100, 125. I mean, they're not huge. So they've got leader. They are so good at leadership development, way better than us. And they've already got a guy, and they're planting them, and they're more of a Soma model, so it fits well with what they're doing. It won't strip them out of leaders like it might for some of others of us, depending on your model. So it doesn't mean you can't early, but the larger and more healthy you are, the more muscle you're going to have. So that is the presentation part. So, Kate, if you want to come up here, and I know that it's a long day, but... He's the brains of the operation in terms of residency, systems, processes, recruiting. I mean, I'm the spiritual eye candy is kind of what I end up being. I don't even know what that means. But, I mean, really, he's the guy that does overwhelming amount of coaching and even recruiting into residency and super gifted. And all, my guys, honestly, in my region, call and ask for Kate a lot more than they ask for me, because what most lead guys want is, because they're terrible at like systems and putting stuff together, they want like kingly help, and he's the best king that I know. So, other than Jesus. So, questions, anything at all? I realize you had two sessions on church planning, but anything you want to talk about things you can do right now? And I'm talking practically. I may even talk about a Bible verse. The guy before me did that, and you've had a lot of Bible verses. This is about planting churches and practical steps that can be taken for guys that are just getting going. And anything you want to talk about? Like elder process, with leadership development pipeline.
Well, kind of, yes. We have a leadership development pipeline that categorizes every single leader that we would have in our church. So everything from a member all the way up to an elder. And it's relatively new, but every single level of leadership has a character and competency expectations. And then every level of leadership is supposed to have a level of training and assessment within each of those categories. And then the other thing that we have is, a lot of times our elder process has been really, really simple. I mean, that's kind of the fancy on paper aspect of it, but the simple aspect of it is that we look for guys who are leading and guys that have people who are following. We look at them and then say, why not them? And they often end up being the ones that are elders. So like right now, we have an elder named Jason Beller. He moved from Ohio back to Texas. He became a member, was a faithful member. He became a group leader, was a faithful group leader. He looked up, there's three or four guys he's leading, so he became a group coach. And then he became an elder, and now he's on our staff. And so most of our elders, that happens. George Woodward, same, I mean, on and on and on. And so that would be the both aspects of our development. The leadership development pipeline is a really good thing to have. I think it's really good, but it's very difficult because, you know, leadership development is not as black and white as a leadership development pipeline, although I'd argue having it is really good. But that would be the two on-ramps for elders up to this point.
If you want a copy of that, in fact, we just tweaked it again. I'd say our implementation, honestly, of our pipeline is B-. I'd say it used to be C. There are elements that we're doing really well. Like I'd say in our gospel community realm, we're doing aspects of it really well. Other areas not. So if you want a copy of our newest kind of 3.0 of what we're doing with that, you can email Cade@RedeemerLubbock.org and he can shoot you a copy of that. So but the subjective part is a big part of our process, that when a guy has, you know, that theologically is a fit, that basically what we do is, like, I've got three different dudes right now that I'm spending time with every few months that are really good. And honestly, I look at 1 Timothy 3 and look at them and go, man, it's hard for me to make a case on what is missing in these dudes. They're gifted, they're godly, they're leading well. So what it comes down to is fit. And so right now we're hanging out, and we've got areas that each of them are growing on that I keep up with them. My admin pushes them to me about once a quarter to make sure, because I'm not awesome at remembering stuff like that. So she will remind me of these things, and then we'll sit down and talk. And then what will happen is when it gets time to like, hey, could they be a fit? We call it dating them, and we'll date them for a few months.
He calls it dating them.
I do. I like awkward stuff. And so we'll date them, and they'll hang out. They'll come to elder meetings, and then they'll hang out individually dates. I mean, with other elders, and everybody just kind of gets to know them. And
he is the only elder that calls them that.
The other thing that I think is really important
for you to remember is that the difference between a church of 1,400 people with, you know, a lot of men and young professionals and things like that, it's easy to look at a guy and go, well, why not? And that's because we have established elders that have been protecting the vision for a long time. And so when we were at that vulnerable place a couple years ago, it wasn't just looking at a guy and going, well, why not? And so we can do that now because we're, you know, we, even within a year, we'll probably be at like a two-team elder structure, which is not applicable at all to anybody in here probably. So early on, I pastored a church for 6 years and was an executive director of a camp and wasn't an elder at our church for 2 years. And I was almost virtually running the whole church. And so we still take eldership very, very serious, but it's a little easier now at 1,400 than it was even at 600 3 years ago. And so some of what we're saying is helpful, and some of it's not applicable in the life stage of your church. So you have to be a lot slower.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because elders number 2 and 3. Now hopefully you've got some kind of a board. How many of you guys have some kind of board of directors external to you that are planting? I would highly recommend, you need some kind of plurality. For us, we built in, pretty quickly, we had deacons, and we built in some things in our bylaws to provide some internal accountability and whatnot. But you disenfranchise yourself by 50% when you go to, and then another third whenever you go to number 3. And you could, your church could easily be hijacked if you're not really, 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 really careful there. So I'm really glad you mentioned that. So it's related to this church planting. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that healthy soil of elders and godly men being developed, that's the soil by which church planters grow. Yep.
Have there been any mistakes you can share with us when you brought somebody outside in, trained them up, and sent them back out to plant?
Like a residency type situation?
Yeah, somebody that didn't grow up in Redeemer. Mm-hmm.
We've made a lot of mistakes. I can't think of one specifically relating to someone from the outside coming in and going back out. One of the guys that we actually sent out that was from among us, you know, did like dual partnership with Acts 29 and Soma. Really good stuff. I mean, Soma has incredible stuff. I think one of the mistakes we made was that we did not clarify the expectations of the relationship between us and them, even if they were going to begin to affiliate with other people. We do not give out near as much money now that we did for that first plant, but we gave a significant amount of money, enough money where you felt like, okay, we kind of expect some communication, but we never really clarified that and communicated that. And so that would be probably the biggest mistake I think that we've made is just a lack of communication. The older we've gotten and the more reps that we've gotten on church planting, the more clear we are in terms of what we really expect out of our relationship with them. And so I think that's served us well and served them well. But early on, I think that was probably the biggest thing that I can think of specifically.
You could ask. I mean, Britton Lewis is all the way over here, be to your right, or my left, over on the side. He's our resident that's going to Salt Lake, and he could probably tell you honestly things we're doing well and not. I'm always concerned that we're giving them enough, because our residents that come in, we don't really ask them to fill organizational roles. We want to, you know, help them learn and study and grow and develop and train and go see their area that they're going to plant and gather a core and get strategic plans put together. So I always worry that we're doing enough for them, you know, but a lot of our guys that we've had, two of our guys that have come, I guess we've had four from us, you know, Padgett has been on staff, another guy that's planting in California right now was on our staff, and then we've had two residents, Britton, and then another one was a guy named Payton that planted in Brady, but he had been involved loosely with us with one of our athlete gospel communities when he was a college student at Tech. And I've had a lot of relational ties with Redeemer members. And then Britton, the way we got to know Britton is he was from Lubbock in town and was next door neighbors with one of our church members. And So, I mean, a lot of different, we had a lot of relational tie-ins. So we try to, I think the key from someone coming in from the outside is you're going to want to really do a good DTR and be very clear on here's who we are, do some theological vetting, who are you and where are you coming from, what are your expectations for this. And we wouldn't take a guy for a church planting residency that wasn't ready to go within a couple of years.
They have to be one to 2 years from being ready to plant.
That next category down is what we'd consider an intern, which we also like that. We've got some really good, 23 to 27-year-olds, and they're just not ready to plant yet. And we want to develop them, but they're just not ready for that. So if we don't think a guy's ready to go and really philosophically aligned with us, Acts 29, we wouldn't go there to begin with. So let me restate it for the audio here and make sure that I understood it too. So you have two options for a staffing position, and this will happen hopefully for you guys where you get on your feet a little bit and think, hey, I've got a couple options. One is a guy that might potentially even serve the needs of your church. Would it be fair to say better, the internal guy? Maybe gifts that are suited for administration. But let's just say not a church planner. Does that be not a church planner? Option two would be a guy that's going to maybe, let's just say, equally meet those needs, but is someone that could be planted out in a couple of years. And then pro and con to that, you get to plant a church, but then you're replacing that position in 2 or 3 years. Is that kind of the question? How would you interact with that?
I would say go with the organizational guy, the guy that's going to move the ball organizationally, because you're still early on. Even though this is just my opinion. He may have a very different opinion. My opinion is even though you're financially stable and you're at a place that it's sustainable, you're still very early on. I would go with the organizational health and structure and someone who can really move the ball for you for a couple of reasons. One, you're trying to plant a church that's going to outlive you. We heard that a little bit this morning. So I think having a really healthy church internally allows you to be able to do that. The second thing is that are you the lead pastor? Okay, so you're a church planter. So you bring someone in organizationally, if they can help you move the ball further, then they get a focus organizationally, and you may be able to actually do some of the church planting stuff that you are obviously uniquely gifted at because you're planting a church. I think in the long term, you're going to be better off as the lead pastor. I think you're going to be able to plant more churches in the long run because your infrastructure is going to be healthy. Your infrastructure is not healthy. You can have a vision of planting 1,000 churches, and you're not going to plant any. So I would go with the organizational health while cultivating the vision for church planting, but allow yourself to mature a little bit before you go in that direction.
And this is assuming that even the leaders are equal. Like if they're both this kind of would bring the same value into the equation.
Yeah, because then one, I didn't hear that they were equal. I heard that the organizational guy was a little bit more developed organizationally. The other guy's a little bit more raw, but could go plant a church.
No, I actually think the guy who would plant would be move the ball forward faster.
Oh, really?
He's more gifted. What would you say in that case?
I still think. Yeah. Okay, well, now you're messing me up here. But I think if the gap isn't just huge, I would still go with the guy that's gonna stay around longer. I mean, you just got done hearing him say what it did to Redeemer when its best leaders left too early. So I think you could even get creative in bringing in the church planner simultaneously. The guy operationally is going to buy back some of your time for you. I mean, Britton raised over $100,000 while he was living in Salt Lake City for a family of five, came back to Texas for 2 years and is going back. So you can get creative and probably do both, but I still go with the guy doing the organization personally.
Yeah, I could kind of go either way on that one. I totally hear what Cade's saying, and I don't necessarily disagree. I think I would want to hear more. I mean, is the guy, are we talking 18 months, a year, or is it more like, five years, you know? I mean, because 5 years is like, in church planting years for us at Redeemer, that's like 35 years, you know? Yeah. I mean, I don't even plan in five-year increments around this place, hardly. I mean, my best guys, I ask them for, hey, what do you see yourself doing in 5 years? When we do our reviews this month, that'll be the question I'll ask every one of them. But anyways, it'd be interesting to dialogue through that more. What's your gut on that?
I kind of like bringing in the guy to learn at the early phases while you're at 57.
Great point, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the best parts about it. I mean, I'll say this, that one of the best parts about Josh Reeves, I mean, we were growing, and that dude that planted in Round Rock was part of like five multiplications of gospel communities and then basically came on staff. And, I mean, man, he learned a ton. And, I mean, it was a killer to lose him, but then he got to learn a ton when he was here. I mean, I could kind of go either way on it. It'd be interesting just to talk through that one. Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe another one or two. Got that right. Stop it.
But anyway, so I've asked certain people to come with me from Lubbock, and I've said, some of them I know, one of my churches, they come give me 3 years and get your, I mean, you want to talk about doing a residency, come get on the front end of this thing, help me plan it. But I also get to assess the entire time. If he's there, you can't, if this guy's with me, you can't gather anyone, you can't lead anything. Nobody's going to plan him anyway. So I might have just saved him. You know, one, but I think it's not a bad idea if you have a clear upfront vision and commitment from them. Hey, I'm here for 3 years, and what I was going to tell them too is you can't leave until you've replaced yourself.
That's good, man.
That's what I've studied, like international church planning. The whole idea is to raise up local leadership and get out, right? Lose your job, and if you can do that, man, I'm all the more wanting to send you to go plant a church somewhere because I've seen you now raise up, develop a leader who could actually do your job. But you now move on.
It's not a bad idea. Sorry, go ahead, man. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That could be a real big win for both of you.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, if you asked for a minimum commitment, that'd be, again, this would be a long conversation, but especially if he's the more gifted guy, if he could give you 3 years, you know, commit to that, you would serve him well in development. Maybe we have time maybe just for like 3 minutes, so one more quick question, if anybody's got one. Yeah.
Really basic, but when you say don't plant in the same city, you can define a city as Mansfield, Texas, where I'm at. 68,000 people, or Fort Worth,
Well, I didn't, just to be clear, I'm not saying don't plant in the same city, but I'm just saying you need to count the cost when you do and know that the amount of people, provided that you've got a good leader that's qualified to do it, that some of your very best people are going to go, and you just need to consider if you've got the infrastructure to support that same city plant. When nobody from my church, I take that back. One guy went with my dude to California. Britton is a recruiting machine. He may have, you know, a dozen that go up to Salt Lake. I bet Padgett will end up with 8 or 10 before he's said and done in Stillwater. What would that number be in Lubbock? I don't know, dozens? I mean, and probably a lot of my best ones. We could handle that now, but there had been a point when we couldn't. I would say Fort Worth, if somebody could kind of basically stay living where they are and just kind of shift a bit, and keep their same job and all that, then, I mean, I love that vision. You need to do that. We actually have a strong desire to plant other churches that reach different kinds of people in our own city. But I just think we approach that a little bit different than we would if, as opposed to the Abilene or Brady or Amarillo top deal, you know? Just have to know that's going to come at a deeper cost. Bob Roberts in Keller has talked about this. He's the one that has said, just do it, but know that you're going to take 2 to 3 years to replenish because of the kind of entrepreneurial leaders that will go out the door. Just prepare for it. So do it, but just count that cost, you know. Don't be turning around and thinking you're going to be able to reload and fire, you know, 3 months later.
I wanted to say one thing to add to some of his notes is that you could do early on in the process is don't forget the vision of church planting. I would imagine that it's really easy for you where you're at. You may be drowning. You're trying to recruit people. You're trying to develop systems and structures. You're trying to raise up elders. And it might be really easy to forget that you want to be a church planting church. And you may forget that because it may be impractical for a while, but talk about it a lot and cast that vision. And the reason I think it's important is for a few reasons. One, it's what inspired you in the first place. So when you are depleted of energy and maybe your work is not as life-giving as you had hoped, vision inspires and encourages and renews and is life-giving, even for your own soul. So remind yourself of that. But in addition to that, it compels and energizes and continues to keep that vision in front of your people. So when your children ministry is really terrible, but they're compelled by this huge vision of church planting, they're going to stick with you as opposed to going to the church down the road. That's a really, you know, maybe broken example, but you get the idea. I'll give you one example of a church plant we have in a very non-sexy place. It's Brady. It's 5,000 people. Now, it is really pretty, in my opinion. It's in Central Texas, so they got huge oak trees.
We have elm trees.
They have oak trees, and they have antique shops that are amazing. He doesn't care. I care. Antique shops are really cool. Other than that, there's not a lot of cool things about Brady. And it, what is happening is really remarkable. I mean, for they planted in late September and have been running at over 125 to 150 people sustainably. And we think we know why. And it's because of the vision of being a church planting church. That before they ever knew that they were going to have a penny, they have allocated over 10% of their budget for church planting. And it's energized the people that are coming in. They don't even know what church planting is, but it's this huge vision. It's bigger than Brady. They're not used to hearing big vision, and so it's inspired them. And so even when you're drowning, keep the vision in, you know, front and center of your people. It's going to inspire them, and it's going to, I think, encourage your soul. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, our people don't even get, they don't know what all we do with it, but they are, you know, they know that they're part of something big, you know? And I love, I mean, that's why I'm here, is that this network and our church, we're a part of something big. So let's do this. Let me pray for us and then get on with the last part of our day. God, thanks for everybody you brought here. And man, we've messed up plenty, but God, you're good. And it's really cool to be a bit player in this whole thing, even though we'll be forgotten in no time, that you're going to be known in the churches that are represented in this room. It really excites me to think about people that don't even know these people in this room yet, that are going to come to faith in your son, Jesus. Some that have not even quite really done much more than gather a core. People are going to be converted. Church planters are going to be raised up, missionaries sent. People are going to be saved in some of the churches that are sent out from churches in here. And that blows my mind. So God, use us in this one life we've got. And I pray that you would help us in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Thanks, guys.